Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. Here I'm joined by an interesting soul for snacks and sometimes full-blown banquets. We share conversation and confessions, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering.
Hey, great lovely ones. As we're on the cusp of another Edinburgh Fringe, despite the fact I'm not going this year, I'm filling your boots with another beautiful, lovely, charming, clever, silly dreamboat of a comedian who is without doubt the next big thing. It's Quan Wen Huang. I managed to grab an hour of his company before he takes his debut hour, Isla Formosa, up to Scotland. Just the smallest of notices to thrill you with first, though, please. Thanks so much if you came to see me hoovering live at the Latitude Festival with a blooming glorious Michelle de Schwartz. What a doozy. The podcast of that will be out later this summery autumn time. We've got an absolutely exciting live show on the 10th of August. It's with none other than actual real life Joe fucking Lycett, Mummy, and me hoovering with you right at you. I know, at time of recording, there are still some tickets, but it may very well have sold out now. Check online and see. There will be a link in the podcast notes. Also, I want to just generally say thanks to you for listening and for being a cheerleader for the Hoovering podcast. You can do that with a tweet, a five-star review on Podchaser or wherever you get your podcasts, and with a bit of word of mouth loving off about the podcast, all sorts of ways. I also use Patreon to fund this podcast, and I'm on a mission to grow our Patreon, because otherwise, long story short, we're dust. Thank you. Huge big thank you to my existing patrons. And if you want to know what I'm on about here, there are a group of people, a club, a gang, a glub of people who give us anywhere from £2 a month up to more in exchange for a really big ton of quite sexy stuff. Things like advance notice of huge guests like Joe Lycett, live shows. They were given discount tickets or free tickets to that special gig. And then also there's just mountains of continuous exclusive content, recipes from guests, birthday videos from me, ad-free episodes, loads they get. If you have a spare few quid a month, please consider joining them. Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod. If you're not fussed with that, that, but you do want to come and see Hoovering Live or see me do stand-up, no wazzers. Go to jessicafosterq.com. It's my website. There are tickets to all my upcoming live show things there. Right, let's have this glorious episode. Quan Wen and me met up in Broccoli and got fancy pants ice creams from a really lovely place there called Sunday, spelt S-U-N-D-A-E. Very trendy. We ate them up, and admittedly, actually, we'd already eaten them up on the walk to Hilly Fields, which is a really lovely park, where we settled, and you join us now already deep in conversation.
My inner struggle is, do I keep pepper, salt, olive oil, and soy sauce on the counter or in the cupboard?
Out.
So once or twice a month, I will put them back in.
Okay.
And then I start cooking.
Nice thought, yeah.
Nice thought. I say, yeah, yeah, good attempt. But then they would just stay on the counter for a good few days until I get into another round of traveling. And I don't cook so much and they'll be back in the cupboard.
I'm in exactly the same situation.
Yeah.
And there's other things I'm allowed out if they're in a pretty kilner jar. Like I'm allowed my seeds. I chuck a handful of seeds on a load of stuff. I'm allowed that out if they look nice. Lentils, like I'm allowed stuff out if it looks nice. I'm happy to have my oil and salt and pepper and soy out.
So currently they are in the cupboard, but I'm a very shallow person. I have 8 cocotte, how do you call that? Dutch ovens.
All I know a Dutch oven as is when two people are in bed and one of you farts and then you trap the other person in there by putting the covers over their head so that they're forced to smell the fart.
It's hurtful when you say that because I've been a dry patch for quite a long time, so I don't really know. I can't really remember what you're talking about, but when I say Dutch oven, it's just a very heavy kitchen utensil. No, they're very heavy, the cast iron pots.
Oh, like a Le Creuset.
Le Creuset, yeah. And I've gone into a phase of collecting more than a dozen of them, of different... No, I'm troubled. Anyway, and I realized that it's just a display of my mental instability, so I can't let friends see that. So I've hidden the majority of them away. But then I thought, I've spent so much money on those fucking stuff, I don't want to sell that. At least I need to show some of them. Yeah. So I picked two colors, the two most matching color.
Ooh.
I have a Marseille blue.
Oh,
Marseille
blue. It. Slightly darker.
And a solar yellow.
On both sides.
I'm cool and shiny at the same time.
I love
I'm like
things.
Ariel singing in the sun. If that makes sense.
So
I don't have soy sauce out all the time, but I have French, like Dutch oven on display without them being used in my kitchen.
Absolutely lovely. I'm so glad that we've managed to talk for so long. Well, I'm not glad. What we've done is talk for so long that we haven't mentioned our ice creams, and I've finished mine. We've got gelato from a place called Sunday, spelled S-U-N-D-A-E, in Broccoli, and we're sitting on Hilly Fields, which is Broccoli's really pretty big, well, one big hilly field of a park, unsurprisingly. It's pretty bougie, this one. And I discovered that gelato place. I've only been once before. It was in the lockdowns when you could only buy things to take away and be outside with.
Yeah.
So we're recreating that moment here, just
right,
out of choice, because it's a lovely day. And it's the first really swanky ice cream place I've had in walking distance from my house ever since I've lived in London.
But I thought they were quite smart. They just called it Sunday without saying it was either an ice cream parlor or a gelato place, right?
Yes, it
because
was.
Because in English...
Do you know what the difference is? Because I don't.
Well, I look it up. I always thought it was different between using cream or milk. But on the Wikipedia page, they say it's basically gelato. In Italian, just means ice cream.
Right.
But in English, when you say gelato, it applies to one that uses actual fresh ingredients. And they say it's much less air content, about less than 35% of air inside.
Oh, so that's why it tastes creamier, because it's less airy.
Maybe. I haven't bothered reading the rest of them.
Well, thanks for doing more research for me. I'm the fucking host.
No, I have the intention of conducting a research. I do have the attention span of someone typical with 2023. So I started without finishing it, which is, you know, I'm male, so I can do that. So I'm joking, I'm bottom, so I don't But they're different, really, I think. At least when you go to Italy, they wouldn't just be using all different colorings, so you would literally taste the ingredients.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also,
I did feel like that about the flavors I had.
Yes,
you've got mango and
Limone.
Mango and limone.
But I think they are a little bit more down to earth. For example, their strawberry is simply strawberry not Fragora.
Yeah, so, totally.
So they make an effort on not trying to be too snobby.
Not too pretentious.
So they did write lemon, not limone, and that was me.
That was
I'm
you.
The wanker.
You turned it into a wanker's flavor by choosing
No, I came here after my Italian class this morning.
Did you have an Italian class?
Yes. I was like, yes, this is great. I live in Bermondsey. Coming to Broccoli, I could walk without realizing I had to go to the embassy area, you know, the one next to Hyde Park Corner. Yeah. To take
really
Italian lessons.
Oh, crumbs.
No, it's not too bad. It's just interesting because we're just going through some of those things this morning.
Oh, I love it. Well, I have just... Yeah, we never had a bougie ice cream place around here before. I always choose to say... I disappoint myself by being such a creature of habit when it comes to ice cream. Generally, I prefer savoury things to sweet things, but ice cream's the one sweet thing that I would say I... It comes as quite... I don't know if you get this. Do you ever? I don't know how you crave particular foods if you do, but most things come to me as quite a vague calling. Even hunger feels like quite a vague thing. I'm not very good at telling how hungry I am or exactly what it is I want.
Yeah.
But with ice cream, it's one of the few where when I want ice cream, it's quite clear that I want ice cream.
Do you mean the brand or the flavour?
No, just as an item at all.
Oh.
But then once I'm in front of it, I then really, because I love all the flavours, find it very hard to go for something I haven't tried before that isn't like on the nutty, chocolatey, coffee spectrum. Like I always go for one of those, and I have again today. I went salted caramel and coffee and it was delicious. But I wish I'd been a bit bolder and maybe like, I don't know, tried a mango and a strawberry or something like that. I don't know. One day I need to branch out and try some fruity business.
I would say this kind of coulda, woulda, shoulda. If you actually had attempted all the different flavors, yeah. I would say 60% of the time you would have ended up regretting not getting the one you really wanted. So I think that's fine.
I think it's to do with like, do you know what? Life is short. You want to guarantee yourself a great time. You don't want to risk a shit time. You don't want to risk a shit strawberry.
At least we're not... American tourists going overseas to eat McDonald's. So long as we don't degrade ourselves into that.
I tell you what, so I just had my first holiday in ages to San Sebastian in northern Spain.
The Galicia?
Yes, it's stunning. And it's got the highest concentration of Michelin star chefs anywhere in the world. But because chefs go there to get work and don't get work straight away, they end up working in these little pinchos bars. So the food is incredible everywhere. It was extraordinary, but even there were some McDonald's where you can go somewhere. Every other door is a little bar where you can go in and for €2 get three mouthfuls of something mind-blowingly delicious, sweet, savoury, whatever. They're all like little plates of tiny things. You're meant to have a few things, move on to another bar. But the McDonald's had like a massive queue coming out the back of it, huge queue at all
times.
The
locals or tourists?
Well, this is it, local teenagers. And I was like, oh, that's funny that you're like, you have access definitely financially to this food. You've been brought up on this food. But for you, the erotic exoticism comes from a sweaty Big Mac that your parents probably would be shuddering.
If I were to offer my perspective, yes. Obviously I'm aware Oriental cooking is amazing. But when I was growing up, when the school lunch option first included McDonald's, people just went nuts.
Yeah.
And part of me think I liked it at that time
because
naturally in my kind of cuisine, very few dishes included potatoes.
Yeah.
And I always love potato. And for that simple reason, if you go to McDonald's, you get chips.
Yeah.
Where else? I don't know. I think in China, northern Chinese, they would soak the potato in water to get rid of the... either the gluten or the starch.
When
they quick stir fry, it becomes crispy. Mm. So when you fry, it doesn't become sort of the mash, but it turns almost like a crispy snack something. But other than that, it's not heavily featured, at least not in Taiwan. So, oh, by the way, you will put that in the program description at Taiwanese, right?
Otherwise, yes, just I will put that in the program description.
It's going on and on. What are you talking about?
Let's get into that. Let's talk about eating in Taiwan. I don't know anything about it. Give me details. What was it like growing up? What sort of thing would you have for breakfast? Educate me like the idiot that I am.
So, in short, Taiwanese people are so obsessed with food. We talk about dinner when we are having lunch.
Yes,
so we are the kind of we're the kind of people. When I think Italian is the closest in Europe to us, is when you get together, you worry so much about food options because if everything was great, the company was great, the weather was lovely, but the food is shite, then everything is shite. The food has to be.
I feel like that, but I feel like an asshole for feeling like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's not about necessarily some Michelin level. or having food you cannot pronounce, or not always about having a bottle of wine, but it's just good, the decent stuff.
Yeah,
and we're always eating. And that makes it difficult when I dated a French guy, because we eat 24-7, and him as a French, they only eat a table when it's the three meals time.
Right.
That involves a ritual of faire la table, laying the crockery and tablecloths, and after that, nothing, like absolutely nothing at all.
What a bizarre
setup, right? I know.
To me.
I know. I mean,
yeah.
I think if I had stayed with him, I would have probably avoided putting on the fuel, but I would have been in a life of misery.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine.
Oh, it's not
so
worth
he
it.
Would
yeah.
tell me off, because back home.
Really?
We go out to night markets, and where you have night market, you basically have games, and you have...
I love games.
Like the goggles. Have you ever played the goggles?
No, what's the goggles? Flicking? He's doing flicking.
Yeah, it's just a little, like, glass balls.
Oh, like marbles?
A marble, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm not an English native speaker, am I? Goggles are...
Yes.
The swim goggles.
And swimming, yeah.
Oh,
the marbles. So you're flicking marbles.
Yeah.
As part of the and there's food markets in these night markets.
Oh, there's some with dodgy animal welfare involved, like trying to catch goldfish or basketball, shooting balloons, etc.
Yeah.
That's where you go for a bit of game, and then you get food, lots of food.
Yes.
And each vendor only sell one thing.
Right. Oh, I love it. Tell me about some of the things you might get then in the time of these night markets.
So we start with the normal one or the scary ones.
Well, start normal, get scary. Come on.
There are some Western import. They'll be selling jacket potato and hot dogs.
That's funny. But we jacket potato.
You may have a pork intestine soup. Or
But is it delicious?
It depends. It's a quiet taste. I grew up eating it. I really like offals.
In some contexts, like I love some kinds of pâtés and stuff like that, so I might love it.
Mm.
Is it the smell that makes it contentious? What is it like? Really rich, really unctuous, or is it like maybe a bit greasy? Or is it?
It's quite chewy and soft and slightly fatty. So either you like it, either you don't.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I love pork belly.
You like pork belly, but pork belly doesn't have that awful... So, it's not exactly light, but the intensity of it is... when you feel seafood can be a bit fishy, some wild birds can be a bit gamey.
Yes, yeah.
So with the awful, there's a specific kind of...
What's the word for it? Like mealy. I should be better. I've had a podcast...
I want to say musky, but that's more sexual, right?
No, so I think musky. I hear what you mean with musky, though. Funky, maybe? Is that what we
it's
mean?
Just like, right, I think this
dense,
part of the animal wasn't... exposed to air very often, so I don't know how to describe it. But when you grew up eating such a thing, you get used to it.
Yeah, of
and
course.
And if treated
so
well,
good for you as well, aren't they full of vitamins and nutrients?
It
minerals?
Depends because some part may contain so much cholesterol. So,
oh, I didn't realize.
So if you have a high blood pressure, probably. But from a budget economic point of view, let's say if I'm not wholehearted 100% veganism. But I do support eating meat, but I also want to preserve the planet, right?
Yeah.
If you kill a cow...
Eat all the fucking bits.
Eat the whole bit, yeah.
I hear you.
Even...
Yeah, I think so, too. Whole carcass butchery, all day.
And if you look
even if there's bits that you don't think for human consumption, like we can feed our pets or use them or do something with it that feeds back into the system.
And we're not the only one, because I went to Spain and I see their supermarket, you can just buy a whole jamon, like a whole pig legs, right? And you can eat the piglets and you see everything.
Yeah.
So our antipasto, our entree, can have... The pig ears.
Yeah.
We can have the ox tongues.
Yeah.
And you may have, in a night market, we may have a duck head.
A duck head?
You just.
You chump
it. The only bit you don't eat is the beak.
I think it's too spiky.
I think the beak is meant to serve as the handle when you chew. And I personally don't know how they taste. But my limit starts at the chicken necks.
Yes.
Like, Duck heads, even for me, is a bit much.
I don't know.
So you see here, you would say some town are famous for something. And back home, we will have a town that is famous for duck heads.
Duck heads. But what? How do you make the skull of it delicious? Or do you like...
Imagine someone who really likes crab's meat, right?
Yeah.
And I'd say most people don't realize, but the jaw is those tiny legs.
Yeah.
Because when you get a big chunk, the satisfaction goes very easily.
Yeah.
And we try to battle with the crab leg. You really want the the bits out, and it's because it's so hard to get, you appreciate it more.
Yes,
and
that's the fun. Like,
and I'm guessing that's the fun of chewing duck hair, because even I don't do it myself. But if you can do it, then, for example, when we eat a fish, it's always the whole thing.
Yeah. I love it.
We don't decapitate our fish. We just cook the whole thing and leave it to the diners to deal with it.
Yeah.
Young people lose the ability, but like my aunties eat a whole head.
All around.
Amazing. And if it's a giant, like a big fish, like a salmon, we will use the head to make it's the base of our broth.
I was going to say, you can just use it to make an amazing fish stock.
Yes.
Yeah, and the bones and everything.
But like, you leave it to the next day, it does smell.
Yeah. What, the stock?
Yeah. So I can deal with the jaws.
Yeah.
Of a fish, I can eat the fish eyes, but my auntie can make sure the entire structure of the fish had descended into
amazing.
A rubble of bones. And
I find it extraordinary. I had an Austrian nana. That mentality, I mean, if she was alive, she'd be in her late 90s, early 100s. But she, I think as well, she lived through a war, you know, etc. It changes your mentality, but she would clean a chicken carcass, like... The family would giggle because it would be this, you know, it was real.
Yeah.
It's a spectacle. There was theatre to it. you wouldn't mess with her after you'd watch that.
But
I look at it now and go, you fucking legend. Again, it's culturally, like some people here will be doing that depending on where they were brought up or taught to cook, or like if you are someone who's from a culture where you stew meat down, then you are definitely eating all of those bits and they're definitely adding to the flavour.
Okay, and I also noticed some butchers, especially those specialised in poultry, they do sell chicken gizzard. Do you guys eat them?
Some people do. I'm going to say it's a generational thing. Not many younger people do.
We are changing too. Sorry. In the old days, when I was a kid, and our cinema are not multinational chains.
Uh-huh.
So our movie food or snacks are not popcorns. It's anything you can put in a soy sauce stew. And that involves from tofu, the hard one, to chicken claws.
Amazing.
And some of them will have a skewer of chicken gizzards. And that's what I...
skewer of chicken gizzards.
I used to watch a rom-com with chicken gizzards.
When Harry met Sally with a skewer of chicken gizzards.
Well, at least there's nothing visual about someone munching on someone else's nuts, but that's what it was.
Well, I don't know.
But it's gone. It's gone. But nowadays you go to the cinema and they will give you a list of the following food are banned because of their strong smell. And you see about 40 to 50 items.
Oh, fuck. That's funny. I wish they'd ever ban stinky old food here sometimes in cinemas. Although you've reminded me of a really embarrassing one. We have, like, my local cinema in Catford is brilliant. It's called Catford Muse and it's independent. It's really nice. And there are, like, street food stalls inside in this, like,
I know, there's a katsu
the
curry in an artistic place, right?
Yeah, and a place called...
Catford Muse.
Yeah, a place called Fuse 8, and she does... Well, both places just do one or two things. Mm. There's a new pizza place that's open, I haven't tried it yet. We'll get it. We must do and get it on the podcast. But, yeah, it's all going on in there, but I had ordered something from one of those places and we were going to see the last James Bond film. And the film started and the people from the store were so nice and they were like, we'll just bring it in. When it's ready, we'll bring it in to you. And I was like, it was a sold-out screening and people are funny about James Bond. Like, I couldn't enjoy the first 25 minutes of that film because I had a clenched, my arsehole was so tense. At the thought of, like, just the social... Just the idea of someone bringing me a fat burrito. Big fucking stinky bit of fried chicken and burrito just into the middle of the screen.
Burrito isn't that bad. My bar is too low for a smell.
I love burritos and smelly chicken. But I just thought people were treating that film like a piece of art. And it was a slightly...
It showed
a kind of modern level of disdain.
Grandiose.
Yeah, but what would you sound like if you said it now in a big boy voice?
Grandiose.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey lads, I'm having a quick interrupt of myself, if you can believe it, and for such fun reasons. It's listener answer time, your stuff, the best of your responses to the questions I post on at the Hoovering Pod on social media. And in this episode, we're still glorying in your responses to me having asked you for all your holiday Hoovering stories. They've been so great. A truly sexual amount of you have reminded me that you have a lot of crisps on holiday. Holiday crisps include ones that are flavoured with things like dill. There's mushroom. There's just how different they taste on holiday. You've even told me, quite a few of you, how different Diet Coke and McDonald's is taste on holidays. A friend recently told me that he had McDonald's in a country which didn't eat beef and it was basically KFC. Fascinating, actually. I think we can all agree. But because he also mentions crisps, we are starting with this lovely message from David Porter, in his own words, up in Aberdeenshire. David says, holidays to Malta have helped us discover some of the best and worst holiday eating over the years. By far our favourite has been discovering Twisties, a baked rice cheese flavoured snack. Initially, that doesn't sound like a great combination, but these are basically cheesy knickknacks, almost identical in shape and texture, but in a cheese flavour instead of our nice and spicy or rib sauce flavours. Oh, I mean, David, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like David is saying that the Maltese have successfully interbred a knickknack and a what's-it into a Twisties. Twistie. And yes, you are thinking what I'm thinking. Is a Twistie a rebranded Cheeto? We'll never know, David continues. A big shout out also goes to the Sphinx Patisserie. It has changed names over the years, but it's still in the same place, in Victoria on the northern island of Gozo. The pastries are amazing, and their local version of what is akin to a Cornish pasty comes in various fillings, all of which are superb. David hasn't given us any more info there. I'm just going to have to guess some of the fillings. Cheese and coconut, ham and mice, and obviously Twistie and milk. Yum, yum, yum. And David continues by sharing. And at the other end of the scale, the bottled soft drink called Kinney that you see in pretty much every store. It's described as a bittersweet soft drink with orange flavour and aromatic herbs, but which is closer in taste, I suspect, to the drip tray under the bitter tap in a less than salubrious public house. He ends with the words, it's rank. Excellent work, David. Thank you so, so much. I will be avoiding Kinney, thanks. Sounds like something you'd get slathered on a grazed knee by a cruel nurse back in primary school. Right, heads up, the next listener responses are objectively disgusting, but you've only got yourselves to blame. First, a voice note, brackets my favourite, from Hannah in Cheshire.
When I was about 23, I went to Thailand on a volunteer holiday. We arrived after 10 hours on a frigging bus and there was no food for another 4 hours. And this man said, oh, well, if you really want food, you'll have to walk into a local village. And we really did want food, me and this other girl. Anyway, we went to this village. It was a lot of, like, stray dogs, it was in the middle of the frigging jungle next to Burma. And we walked into this village. And then they had this, like, little village market and they sold us this stuff. And I had what I thought was like a duck spring roll. It was dog. And I spent the following 7 nights, well, long and the short of it, involved an injection and lots of tablets to empty my horrifically toxic bowels over. So, yes, I ate a fucking dog and ended up shitting myself like a fucking dog.
Oh dear, sorry everyone, sorry Hannah, I really thought you were going to say it was delicious then. We can't let this ruin spring rolls for us guys though, okay? That's actually very important. Okay, now we've got a WhatsApp message from Emma, who says, I recently went to Porto, where salt cod is a speciality, and she had cod tongues. She finishes with, on purpose! That's my favourite bit of any of this so far, where Emma said on purpose. She says, I didn't know they had tongues. Wouldn't meet you and me neither, Emma. I didn't know they had tongues big enough to eat. Oh, you thought they had small, just very small tongues. I love it that it's like, wow, I would eat a cod's tongue, but too tiny to bother. No, Emma, Emma will only eat an animal's tongue if it's nice. It's a nice big tongue. Emma says, I didn't know cods had tongues big enough to eat. They came in a really rich garlicky sauce, which was genuinely delicious, followed with a stew featuring swim bladder tripe, which was also very tasty. And I was pleased to discover, after a quick Google, that it's the bit that helps fish float, so there was no wee involved. Would recommend. She's included a photo for reference. Oh, I love that. She suspected my disbelief and has included a photo. And it does look yummy. If we're going to eat a cod's butt or cheek or arm or whatever it is we're having with our chips, I think we might as well scoff its tongues up too. Saying cod's tongue doesn't fill me with hunger, but I will work on that. And the picture does make it look absolutely lovely. It looks like, I think that's bread. It looks like some yellow things floating in a bowl of greeny yellow with some lovely looking greeny herbs. I'm not good at selling it. I've not made it sound delicious. But I'll tell you who has made it sound delicious, Emma, who actually ate it. So thank you very much for that, Emma. Right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. If you sent us a holiday answer, you're the fucking best, best, best. Those were my favourites. But thank you to all of you who got back to us. Make sure you're following at the Hoovering Pod. We love hearing from you. More questions coming all the time. Let's get back into this lovely episode with Quan Wen.
You're about to go and do the Edinburgh Fringe. It's your first hour.
Yes.
I'm assuming you're nervous. You're only mortal.
I'm depressed. No, I shouldn't be. I'm looking forward to it. I shouldn't be that honest. Someone should have prepped me for that. I'm depressed by the admin elements around it.
It's exhausting. You finding the emotional turmoil in the run-up to a Fringe, which, frankly, there just is, unless you're completely...
Okay, this is like marrying someone and wishing you don't have to deal with the in-laws, but it's impossible.
Yeah.
I'm loving the creative part of the process, but I'm obviously hating the admin part, but they are part and parcel of the same thing. So.
And also, nothing else... I don't think anything can prepare you for what a creative roller coaster, and there's nothing like doing an hour of comedy that you've written or a show that you've written by yourself, especially if it's like personal confessional, whatever, every day at the same time in the same place to a good audience who love comedy. It's extraordinary. The whole experience is extraordinary. Everything else that comes with it is exhausting.
Aww.
By the by. But my question was,
yes,
do you find that, like, because for me an Edinburgh Fringe would kind of consume my entire year emotionally, administratively, and adrenaline-wise, and it would affect how I ate. Have you found being in the run-up to something that feels really sort of, it's kind of exciting but also stressful and nerve-wracking?
I get to that the low point, you forget about your no cup after six plan, or maybe not having an entire chocolate bar before going to sleep. You're just fuck it. I'm so depressed. I just need to get through the next hour or tonight. I don't care.
Or
because you want to do a preview and you're running out of options, you go somewhere so far, and on the way back say, I'm only going to get to London at 1 in the morning. Surely a kebab is not too much.
I love it. And what time is your show up there?
5:40.
That's quite a sensible time in terms of, like,
I know.
You can then decompress and then have one good nerve-free
I'm the pre-dinner warm-up.
Lovely. Lovely. That's my absolute favourite time of day to do.
You think so? I prefer a slightly earlier afternoon, but I'm bottom of the food chain. Couldn't get...
Between 3 and 6, I would say, is the dream start.
Yes.
Time. Yeah, lovely. And, oh my God, I think we're going to have an excellent time up there. I know it. Where should we go with this? Where should we go? I feel like you've covered loads of my questions I had about Taiwan and
food
stuff.
Culture?
Yeah, go on.
Oh, so I think it has to do with about up to the 1960s, Taiwan was still a pretty much an agricultural society.
Yes.
And that means that my parents' generation kept the mentality of the peasants. Oh. And they're always going to remember the time when they were young, when they were a child, they didn't have enough to eat. So they always overcompensate.
Right.
It's a big extended family. When they say that, let's get a get together, each family prepared 2 to 3 dishes. And my mum and their auntie, each one of them will over prepare.
Right.
So some family, brings forth. So I'm so sorry, I accidentally prepared one more dishes, and then she realized the other sister are even bitchier. They become 2 more dishes, and the whole place is drowned with food. And they have to take out 2 spare dining tables just for extra guests. And it will be so big that even is in my auntie's place, we have to like buffet, and all the cousins queue to get food and. Incredible. Until you feel like your stomach's gonna explode.
The host will feel like
they didn't do their job properly.
Oh, I love
force feeding. We treat each other like frog rot. So, that's how you show love. I'm gonna treat you like that goose.
Do you find yourself doing that in your relationships? I have a parent who loved feeding.
I think my first foreign boyfriend, the poor French guy, I was feeding him all the weird things. I think you should just accept it because you're supposed to love me, and I just keep cooking for him without him asking for it, and later I blame him for not eating it. It's like, do you know the amount of hours I spent in making this stew for you? And it's like, I didn't ask for it. It's like, no, but I was guessing you want it, and if I have to wait until you tell me you want it, then I'm not good enough partner. Am I? Sorry, I'm a bit much.
No, you're not. It's perfect. I think so. Yeah, I have. I'm really aware that the people in my life, you know, like my son and my partner, and I'm really aware that they're under a conscious pressure to show appreciation for the cooking I've done that they didn't ask for. I think that's like I can't not do it. It's one of my very few sort of increasingly pathetically small list of love languages is cooking for people.
It is.
And I do need them. I don't need them to love it, but I do need them to be like, it's nice. I'm like, oh, thanks. I've never understood. I remember when I'd stay with my cousins as a little kid, and I look back now and go, there's a healthiness to that too, but they'd be like, oh, I hate this, Mum. Or like, oh, I'm not having that. And they'd leave a bit. Or they'd like, or just the simplicity of stopping when they're full.
That's actually very sensible when it comes to personal health.
Exactly, and I think, you know, as much as I need to hear a little thank you and perhaps the odd lie that something's nicer than it is, I also, which goes hand in hand with it, do want the people around me to know they can stop when they're full, because that's something I never felt like I could, and I've had to try and learn as an adult.
I know, but I've also learned something else. I have a really good friend from my second job as an Austrian lady.
Yeah.
And her partner, after retiring from his business, has gone on to learn this Cordon Bleu, the cooking school, and he's now posting constant, amazing food pictures on Instagram. Whenever I go to their place, I need to make sure I procure some proper gift, like good stuff. Not about expensive, but just good quality stuff.
Yeah,
and we can show the appreciation by shifting the focus on quantity to quality.
Yes.
So quantity is reasonable, but quality, we absolutely splurge, just have a tiny bit of things. Yeah. I would go to Borough Market to buy, for example, Croatian prosciutto and mixing with the red wine they have. And I feel that's the same level
of
joy.
Lovely.
I just feel back home, the whole culture is about pushing the limits. So if you can only show your love by pushing it, I don't think it's healthy. And I've been debating, we have this thing that your parents expect children, because we eat around a lazy Susan, does that make sense to you?
Is that like a, does it turn, does it spin?
Yeah, because you don't have your own meal. Everyone shares the same dishes.
Oh, I love it.
So to show your love, you're supposed to, before they do it themselves, you're supposed to snatch a piece of meat or something and put it in your parents' sort of rice bowl to show that before I eat, I think you should eat first. I'm thinking of you ahead of my own needs. But for me, it's a little bit of theater because it's super unhygienic, if you remember. And also, my mom would give me something that is not exactly what I want to eat, because I have like a optimal sequence, for example.
Okay.
I want to start with this and I want to have the thicker sauce later.
Oh, I love
things
this
like that.
Optimal sequence, and I love the way you
so
said
that.
So
maybe I've lived in the West too long, but I think it's just so much easier if we each pick whatever you want to eat and the quantity you want to eat. But let's just show our love for each other by talking about it. We can't, we're Asian, we can't talk about it. But I don't know how. But I do think picking food for other people is annoying. But my mom deeply wanted me to do that. Yeah. And she wanted to do that to me. I will always turn her down. So I don't know. I find it a dilemma. Some of my friends, you should just let her have it. Some of my friends then say, no, this is a boundary. You need to set a clear boundary with your mom. So as a mom with a young boy, what do you think?
Oh, my God. What a brilliant lot of things you've just said. I'm fascinated by the dilemma and I understand it completely. I think in the West we fetishize cultures that have a sharing system of eating, and but also I've spoken to so many people who have so much trauma around boundaries being misplaced or not there or enforced, like I don't know, like, and not actually having autonomy over their own hunger, their own fullness, their own desires when it comes to eating, that there has to be some kind of balance, and it's delicate. I don't want to be the one to decide what the order of the balance is. I think it also depends on is the specific relationship with your mum and the strength / fragility of that. If that's one easy thing that you can do that could bring her inordinate joy, is it worth it in the offset, the balance of things? There's a very clear image in my head that I was thinking of when you were saying it's unhygienic. Like, well, my son was younger and he still always got filthy hands. If he was passing me something, quite often he'd be eating something and I'll say, can I try that? And he's so tight, like he's fucking stingy, only child, Western fucking only child. I'd be like, I've given you a whole bag of those new sweets. Like, please, may I try one? I have your least favourite flavour. And I'd be like, no. No, and then he'll wait till the end and then he's handled it. It's like fucking disgusting, sweaty, clacky. And he'll like pass me it then. I'll be like, I don't want it now. I don't want that.
Okay. I'm going to tell you two stories in response to that. Yes. So first, on my end, my mom used to come to me all the time, say, can I have half of your banana? Can I have half of your meatball? And I will always say, mom, if I only have half of it, I don't feel enough. Yeah. But if I eat one and a half, I will eat too much, and you criticize me for being too fat. So you're putting me into a very difficult
situation.
Well,
then you are bringing in another element to this
dilemma.
And then
my mom would start to cry and then say that, I pushes you out of my vagina. I raise you up to this point. You don't even want to share half of a fucking meatball with me. You ungrateful little...
No, you're taking her side. How could you, Jess? You've made it funny. You've revealed how funny she
is. No, but it's just in the same...
The vagina bit was funny.
Just think of it as a very old-fashioned sketch, except the meatball will be a different food every time, and it's just the same frame over and over for the last, like, 20, 30-odd years.
Jesus.
And secondly, I was traveling with my mom and some of her sort of industry friends. Mm-hmm. They were coming to Europe to do a trip in Switzerland, and they're going to Milan to see a trade exhibition. So I agreed to keep her company. I was fucking awful for the trip because all those aunties and uncles are so old. Every day the coach cannot drive more than 1 hour without finding a toilet for them.
Gosh.
So it's just days of stopping the coach and pee and go back to the coach and keep driving. And my mom was expecting me to snatch something, even though we all have our own dishes.
Yeah.
Occasionally we have Chinese food. And all the other aunties and uncles be like, come on, go get your mom something, show that you love her, right? They're being nosy. I didn't. But I made something to reassure my mom, I do love you in my own way. Let's not be so stuck up about tradition. My mom was thinking the European food was really bland and I can't blame her. And she was constantly asking for Tabasco. Mm-hmm. And those restaurants, it's in Switzerland, they don't do Tabasco. They just do salt. And finally, one day at the gas station, I found a Tabasco in a shop. So I bought it and I carry it with me because mom doesn't carry those things. So every time when we about to eat, I would just take out the Tabasco and say, do you need it?
Aww.
So she knows I were thinking about her.
That's lovely.
I don't do the little theater of taking something with my hygienic chopstick into her bowl, but it doesn't mean I don't love her.
No,
of course
not. I
just have my different boundary and I do it my way, so...
You've nailed it. There you go. And then that's it.
She just sent me a very long emotionally blackmailing text. I can't translate all that. It's too scary, but we are working on it.
Quick fire questions.
Tell me about food that you were given as a gift or won as a prize.
fancy surprise, like giving us a gift. Oh, shock me. I don't bake cake.
No?
So whenever I receive a baked cake, I always feel amazed.
Oh.
Yeah. Except after living in the UK for so long. If it's a Victorian sponge cake, it's a bit low effort. But in general... No, because I lived in Berlin for 1 year, and
right.
Germans like to bake their own cake.
Loves cakes.
A friend used to bake an entire Schwarzwald, the Black Forest cake, whoa, on her own, and whoa, say it's her German nana's like Oma's Kuchen. I just thought that was amazing. It was, yeah, the most amazing thing I've ever tasted.
I'm a quarter Austrian, and they really love their cakes. Would you rather eat sand or grass?
Grass.
Okay, me too.
Oh, wait a second. It's more likely to have an animal pooed on the grass.
I've watched,
yeah, but I rim. It's okay. I'll say grass.
Have you ever tried eating upside down?
What does that mean?
Like being upside down and I'm having some food, like a handstand.
Okay.
Or like hanging from a sexy swing?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yes,
I do the sex joke too much. So yeah. I've eaten upside down, but not food or something. I was put in that position reluctantly, though. So.
Oh, well, that's become a sad story.
But do you believe in... some people say you have to be upside down for at least a minute or so every day.
Pregnant. Oh, no.
No, to stretch your body back.
I think that's...
And I thought that's just too ambitious to assume people can even put themselves into that position.
Most people haven't even attempted that since they were five. That's such a bizarre thing to tell us in our 40s that we're actually meant to be doing all the time.
I tried aerial yoga once.
I really love handstands.
I can't. You're so strong, I can't. I don't have enough strength in my arm.
You have. You have. It's practice and confidence. You absolutely, you definitely have. What is the most oldie-fashioned-y thing you've ever eaten?
It's not the most old-fashioned, but it's the one I absolutely hated the most.
Oh, yeah?
It's dried radish.
Mm.
Basically, grandma's pickles. And there are all the different kind of pickles, because in the old day, when you don't get enough fresh vegetables,
yeah,
they tend to make your own pickles.
Pickle them and then
eat it in the morning.
Yeah.
And a typical breakfast we didn't manage to cover,
yes,
but traditionally, we eat congee, which is rice cooked with a lot more water, right, than actual rice. So it comes out soft. I think it's because it's easier to digest in the morning.
Right.
But people tend to just eat pickles.
Ah.
And there's not a lot of protein, so I absolutely hate it. And my mom say that don't be choosy with your food. You have to eat everything. I then say surely between a fresh material and a pickled item, that the fresh one's always going to be better.
Yeah.
I never liked it. Never, ever.
Pickled veg. No.
I like a lot of pickle, but this dried pickled radish, I don't know. I just, when I eat it, I feel poverty and the weight of history. We as a country, we have got rid of that past.
This tastes of poverty. This just tastes of poverty.
Peasantry.
Really peasantry. Have you ever eaten food intended for someone else?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That tastes the best. You know that my secret thing, what I've always wanted to do, coupled with the culture that you shall not waste stuff, right?
Yeah.
When I go to a restaurant and I see the neighboring table left half-finished food, we have, like, lunch fun canteen, and I will actually ask some of my small, like, sparrow stomach colleague, can I have their residual potatoes and chicken? They will always let me have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I finish everybody's leftovers, but the idea of doing that in a restaurant would be so joyful to me. I remember when I was a waitress in my teens, in a posh hotel, so hungry. I was on £3.50 an hour, and I was hungry. You work for hours and hours and hours, and you don't get fed. You're not worthy of this lovely food. But you were taking platefuls back to the plate wash with, like, untouched roast potatoes on there, like perfect, still warm.
Exactly.
Where they'd been like, nah, you know, they're not interested. And I'd eat them and I'd get caught and I'd get so told off. I'd be like, they'd be like, that's disgusting. Someone could have sneezed on that. I'd be like, I didn't
give
a fuck.
Yeah, but if you're not giving out to Costco, why not? I went to a Sunday roast ones, and this lady, the neighboring table, she had a bite of the roast lamb. She then say, I'm sorry, I can't have this. It's too fatty. And then she went on to eat a whole apple crumble later. I'm just like, you hypocritical. But, and also, lamb is supposed to be fatty. That's the whole point.
Yeah. What's the worst smelling but best tasting thing you've ever had?
Licorice.
Lovely. Quick answer.
Don't even ever think about it. Oh.
Now, it's time for the big end question.
Andrew Tate and Julia Hartley Brewer have a baby, and within a few years it's taken over the world, and it's clear that it's the worst possible person that anyone has ever imagined, and it's born somehow connected to and completely in control of the whole internet. Even AI just gives up. It gets into everyone's head like one of those flies that lays parasite eggs into fish's brains to make them swim to the surface and get eaten by birds. And yeah, women get their mouths sewn up and we all have to live in garden cages. Anyway, it's a disaster. And my least desirable apocalypse that I've ever thought of for this podcast, ever even imagined, and it's accidentally made me sad. But anyway, it's all agreed to have never happened, but only if you, and weirdly, it does have to be you, Quan Wen, do all the ballet in Swan Lake, all by yourself, with no breaks, whilst popping your lower jaw out the whole time like a shark, constantly, which keeps anyone from being able to give you any snacks at all. It sounds impossible. But you do it!
I would do it.
You're a hero, it's done.
No, I've been to Edinburgh so many times, I have no shame left. I mean, I'm so scared.
In this scenario, you've achieved it. You've saved humanity from the most disgusting fascist apocalypse of all time.
No, I would say it sounds like a made-up apocalypse, but it doesn't sound that different from the reality we
have. No, exactly. I think that's why it made me sad. I've accidentally written a plausible one.
And I just thought when you're describing the horrible baby, I thought, are you talking about Lauren Fox?
So, you've saved all of humanity.
Yay!
You've saved us. Everybody adores you. You're...
No, some people on Reddit won't adore me anyhow.
No, it's a fantasy situation. Let me finish. You're worshipped forever like a god, but your reward in the moment is the feast of your dreams. And because Swan Lake took ages, you had to dance every part, not just the lead. You're fucking hungry. So this is the opposite of a last meal.
Yeah.
You couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
You couldn't be. This is the beginning. This is not the end. If you were the happiest and hungriest you can ever imagine being, what would you eat and what would you drink? And if you would like to set this somewhere location-wise, and if you'd like to have someone from a fantasy situation joining you, you're welcome.
I like a seafood buffet with all different kinds of shellfish possible, and to finish, top it up with the tastiest limoncello.
Oh, lovely.
And I guess it's weird because I come from an island, and I grew up eating seafood. There'll always be some seafood. So calamari, squid, octopus, shrimps are not something that is so odd. But I feel UK treat itself more like a continental country.
Yeah.
And most seafood are not cooked. So I do miss some good, really good seafood.
Mm.
And I guess that's what I'm always craving since I moved to the UK.
Oh, I love it. Thank you for doing my silly podcast.
No, it's absolutely lovely.
Hoovering Podcast.
Let's start the hashtag. Hashtag optimal sequence. I really loved him having an optimal sequence. What a rich, juicy, satisfying, fascinating, open conversation. I'm so grateful for that time with Quan Wen. Please go and see his first Edinburgh show up at the Fringe. It's called Isla Formosa. Hope I'm saying that right. And if you're not up there, I bet he gets to tour with it. At the very least, he'll be doing a London run. He's such an excellent comedian and a real star in the making. He is brilliant live. Follow him online. He is Quan Wen Comedy. K-U-A-N-W-E-N Comedy. Thanks so much for your answers to the listener questions again, you winners. They're so great. Watch out for more questions coming all the time on our social media. Tickets to all my live work, including Hoovering Live, next one's 10th of August with Joe Lycett, as ever, are on my website, jessicafosterq.com.
Follow us on social media at The Hoovering Pod. I'm on at Jessica Foster Q. Send us voice notes, pictures, WhatsApps to 07462 855 271. Email us, thehooveringpod@gmail.com. I'll be storing all your beautiful offerings up and discussing them in future episodes. Keep an eye on our social media for any specific questions and topics that we'll be asking you to contact us about. Links to everything interesting mentioned today are, as ever, in the podcast notes. Hoovering is presented and created by me, Jessica Foster Q. The music is by Jake Yap, and it was produced by Laura Grimshaw. Until in 2 weeks, happy Hoovering.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget?
Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.